Mr. Gibson, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Mr. Gibson?
In Sunderland.
Date of birth?
The 3rd of January, 1920.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a wood-turning machinist.
And did your mother work?
No.
What family did you have, or did they have?
I had three sisters, younger than myself. My father was an only child. My mother was from a larger family. She had two sisters and three brothers, two of whom died during the war. One was in the DLI, killed in France. Two younger brothers served right throughout the war. Uncle Fred was known as one of the old contemptibles. So in my grandmother's house, there were plenty of medals upon the wall, and many reminiscences of the First World War.
Was your father in the First World War?
No. My father was blind as a young man. I think it was due to the effects of scarlet fever. With the result, he could hardly read when I was born.
The area that you lived in?
Yes. I was born in Farringdon Row. Now, the Row may sound rather posh, but in actual fact, just across the road was a wall behind which was the railway, the wagonway bringing the coal from the coal mines, taking them down to the shipyards and down to the dockside. Behind us was another wall, down which came more coal in trucks to feed the electricity power station. At the bottom of the street, we had Lane Shipyard. And with the result that with trucks on either side of us and the shipyard at the bottom, once the men had gone down to work and the buzzers all sounded, and having so many shipyards near at hand, and so much activity on the river, it was quite noisy where I lived.
A very working class area.
Well, it was, yes, yes.
And what was life like in that area, you know, as a child living in the
As a child, I loved every minute of it, because we had good friends. There were no cars in the street. No one could afford a car in those days. We didn't even have a proper ball to play with. Rags tied with a piece of string or a milk tin, and we played our games. If anyone had a ball, you looked after them. And if they ran away with a ball, it was Billy Billy Buff, the game smashed up.
And your neighbours themselves, what were they like?
Well, that was a funny thing. We had to share yards, you see, and share toilets, right? So you had to be very friendly with your neighbour, especially on a Monday morning, because it was wash day, and both the women from both houses were trying to do their washing in the same place, yes. But we had many good friends, and in the winter, you only had outside taps, and when they froze up, you had to rely on your good neighbours along the back street to open their doors and give you some water.
Were the earth closets the toilets at that time?
No, we'd advanced to flush toilets by then. Still shared with the neighbours next door, of course.
And you took turns on the kind of rota base to keep them clean, didn't you?
Oh, yes. And mothers were very proud, you know. My mother was up, and so was the lady next door, every morning before 7 o'clock to scrub the step before the workmen came down. That was pride. They had to have the step done and washed, and the pavement outside swilled before the men came down to work.
What was the house like? Could you describe it?
Yes. There were only two rooms. One was a living room and plus kitchen with a great big fireplace, an iron fireplace, and there was one bedroom.
So how? What were the sleeping arrangements with three girls and a boy?
Well, that was our first house, you see. By the time my second sister arrived, we'd moved house. Mind, we'd just moved across the railway line, across the bridge, to a practically identical location. But we had an upstairs this time, and we had more rooms.
And your neighbours, was it this the era of trusting your neighbours without locking doors?
Oh, we never locked doors, we never bothered. We never heard of anyone being robbed.
And would they come in and borrow their sugar?
Yes. My grandmother lived only a couple of hundred yards from us, and her house was an open house. The front door was never closed, and anyone could pop in there and have a chat, sit round the fire and have a chat. And she had some rare characters came in.
And as you've said, you could rely on your neighbours in times of trouble or problems in the
family.
Of
course, yes.
It obviously was a very tough area with it being in the site it was, and of course the heavy work that men were doing. What role did the public house play? Was there a lot of drinking?
Well, in those days, women never ever went into a pub, right? So it was only men who went in drinking. And for all, we had a pub next door to us in our second house. I can't remember ever having any trouble, not unless I went to bed too early and didn't hear it. And there was a pub at the top of the street, a famous one, the Black Swan, and I never heard of anything. Saturday night, the Salvation Army used to come and play outside the pub, and that was probably the only time that we took notice of the pub, when we went up to hear the Salvation Army.
What games did a small child get up to?
Boys, we played kick the tin, we played deliver, we played hoist the banner, hoist the flag. There was Mountie Kitty. We played Mountie, which was a rather bit dangerous at times. And if it was raining and the water was rushing down the gutter, we made little boats with whatever was available. Cigarette packets, matchbox packets, floated them down the gutter. We sometimes blocked the gutter to make a pond for ourselves, so we'd have our own private pond. When it was very hot, the tar in the street used to melt, and we used to scrape lumps of that up, put it on the end of a string, and whirl it round and see how high we could throw it into the sky. There was a water cart used to sometimes come to cool the tar down. And in those days, no lads had long trousers. We all had short trousers and boots. We used to take off our boots, wrap them round our neck, put our shorts up as far as possible and follow the water cart so we'd get our legs washed. Girls, well, they were very clever with it. They used to come out with a skipping rope. And I can remember, I always say that I was taught a lot by the girls in our street, because even as a child, when I was sitting out in my pushchair, the girls would be saying 2, 4, 6, 8, Mary at the cottage gate. So I learnt to count in twos. Then they would sing raspberry, strawberry, marmalade, jam. Tell me the name of your young man, A, B, C, D, E. So I learnt the alphabet before I was three. And then they would sing All In by January, February, March, April, May. So I knew the months of the year before I started school, you see, just because of the girls and all those songs they used to sing while they were skipping. And then they would bring out the ball and play two baller against the wall. I don't know whether you know about that. They would, long dresses, they would tuck them up their knicker legs so that the ball could go underneath, and they would play sixie.
160.
Yes, two baller. Well, there's six like that, five like that, four through the legs, jump round, three through the legs again, yes. They were very clever with juggling balls, the girls. Then they would sometimes come up and say, will you put my skips up? Now, do you know what that involved? You had to put the skipping ropes round your neck, take hold of the gas lamp, and go up the gas lamp, because there was a cross member on the gas lamp. You put the rope over there. Of course, sometimes you just get to the top and look down. There were no girls. There was just the copper. The girls would then put a knot in the rope and swing round and round the lamppost.
And the policeman, as you referred to, was a very respected gentleman, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, you were scared of the policeman, yes. They had those white gloves, you know, that could sting.
And it was quite safe to play in the streets?
Oh, no, no bother, no bother. Once the shipyards finished at 5 o'clock, the buzzers went. We knew you knew the times by all the different buzzers. We knew when it was 7:30, 8 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 5 o'clock. And we even knew the different, there was Duxford Shipyard, Lane Shipyard, Shaw Shipyard, and we knew the different buzzers.
What role did the church or chapel play in your life?
Well, opposite to my grandmother's house was the Hopper Street Mission. Now, it was part of the main church, Bishop Weymouth Church, and it served that little area, which was a poor area. The poor people liked to go to the mission because they couldn't get dressed up to go to the proper church. So they loved the mission, and that mission used to be crowded. And as a one-year-old, I started at the mission, at the Sunday school, learning. I can remember the name Harry Pickering teaching us, hear the pennies dropping, and all the little hymns, you know. Jesus bids us shine with a pure, clear light. And I stayed at that Sunday school and never missed until I was about 14. And then I joined the Bible class. And they had a sister, from the church, was attached there. And from being small, she organized us into playing pantomimes for Christmas. She looked after the brownies and the guides, and it was a well-run place. We loved it, especially when it was a harvest festival, and the mission used to get filled with fruit, and we were allowed to sit on the big stone windowsills at the back and watch the concerts, you see.
Your father, you say, was a carpenter, was it?
A woodworker. Wood machinist, yes. Yeah.
Had he a good wage? Could he sustain the family?
Well, it was about £2 something to £3 something, which when he was working, we were all right. In fact, we were the first ones to get a wireless set in our street. Would be about 1923 or 24. I remember them bringing all the little bits of wire and building a crystal set. And we had to sit round with our earphones and listen to crackling and hope to hear a voice. But he was also a banjo player, and he went to lessons when he could afford it. And that's how I came to be involved with music.
Your mother must have still had a struggle to, you know, to make ends meet.
Oh, yes. I can remember my mother coming to me one time when we had the full family and saying, I've got 1 6 pence per week to keep. That was when father was out of work.
Desperate times. So she must have done a great deal of her own cooking and
baking. Oh, yes. She made all her own bread, yes. Mm-hmm.
That's a memory in itself, isn't it?
It's a memory in itself, because I remember when she was making the bread, a great big dish and all the flour and putting the water and the yeast in. And then she would sometimes say to me, "Oh, I've drowned the miller." Now, did you know? It meant she'd put too much water and she would send me out for a bag of flour. You see, if she drowned the miller, she'd put too much water. And then I had to go and get and run out and get some more flour.
Clothing, was that difficult to get?
Oh, yes.
If you had three sisters, you couldn't really pass the clothes to you, could
no,
they?
I was the only one. I had to have the... I was the only one, but my sisters, they passed on things from one to another.
Yeah, I don't suppose you had in that locality a garden or allotments or anything. But your father was
yes,
partly
well,
sighted, wasn't he?
It was an unusual place where we lived because near to the river there was a big cliff. It was called the Rock Top. And on that rock top, overlooking the river, there were some allotments. And my grandfather had an allotment there. And I spent many happy hours there because my uncles who I've mentioned who were in the war, they never had a job after they came out. They served right throughout the war, came out on the dole. And they used to spend their time down there. Now they, in that allotment, they had a full-sized boxing ring. They had punch balls. And they kept themselves fit there. And they kept pigeons. And they looked after horses. And they grew, of course, as much as they could in the allotment. I remember picking the rhubarb and the cabbages, etc. And going round taking off the caterpillars for them.
Medical, how did that work? If you were ill, were you insured in any way?
Well, my mother used to pay sixpence a week to Dr. Wallace and... his dispenser used to come round and collect the sixpences every Friday. And that sixpence per week meant that we were looked after by Dr. Wallace.
And the house was rented? Is that...
Yes.
So you had your father and mother had a rent to pay plus your insurances before anything else?
Yes, that's right, yes.
So... what would you call it, a pretty frugal life that you had?
Yes, but we didn't know any other, so we were quite happy.
And assume like so many families at the time, you never knew just how hard times were that your father and mother were going through.
Well,
you sheltered from it to a degree.
I can remember as a boy hearing about the means test, and the people in the street were so poor that they were on this means test. And people used to come and say, if you had a piano, oh, you've got to sell that, we can't give you any money. If you had anything that was rather valuable, you had to sell it before you were allowed to claim any money.
As you grew up, did you find little jobs for pocket money?
Well, when I was about... 8, the headmaster came round while we were having a singing lesson. I was at Bishwimo Church of England School, you see, and this was in the big boys, because once you were 7, you went in the big boys, and the girls went in the big girls, and never the twain shall meet. And the headmaster came round, Mr. Futrell, and he put his ear to me, and he said, "Right, will you report to... Bishwimo Church tonight at 6 o'clock. And that changed my life because I became a member of Bishwimo Church Choir. I don't know whether you know the church opposite to the Empire. And I was in there until I was in uniform.
From little things?
Yes. And from starting at having 1 and 6 pence a quarter, then 1 and 9 pence a quarter, then 2 shillings a quarter... I became the richest one in our house because we had some shell cases with a slot in the top, and any of my choir pay that I could spare used to go in there. with the result when I was 11 and passed the 11 plus exam, I had to have blazer, shorts, cap, tie, socks, new shoes. My mother said, I can't afford them. So I said, well, open the shell case. And there were 37 shillings in that shell case, which was enough to buy me my blazer, my cap, my tie, and my socks.
Can we go back then to the start of your school life? Where did you start school?
Well, I started school at Bishop Weymouth. It was called Rectory Park.
And that was the infants?
That was in the infants, yes.
And then, as you say, at 7 year old, you moved up into the
seniors. The seniors, yes.
What are your memories of school life?
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed school life. And I was rather surprised because once we got into the senior school, in the second year of senior school, we started to get reports. And there was no one more surprised than my parents to find that I was top of the class every time. In fact, when I passed the 11 plus and put this uniform on, I stuck out like a sore thumb. Everyone used to stare at me, you know, the boys used to jeer, you see. I was something unusual.
So you'd get ribbed for...
Oh, yes, definitely. I was called a West Park sissy.
What were your favourite subjects?
I was always top in French and Spanish. Not so good at maths, but French and Spanish. There was another lad, Hodgson. If he was top in French, I would be top in Spanish, and vice versa. I love those. And nature study, of course.
Any teacher that stands out in your mind as influencing your life?
Well, they were all good teachers at my school. First of all, the last year of junior school, when I passed the 11 plus, we had a Mr. Hudson, and we thought that was great because he produced a football. It was the only football, mine it was a small one, was the only one we'd seen, and he would go and come out in the yard and play with us. And we'd had lady teachers until then, so that was absolutely smashing. We loved him. And if you were very good, he would probably take you to see with Bird to the South Pole, some film that was educational. So we loved him. But in the senior school, there was a Mr. Newton, Jackie Newton we called him, and he was mad keen on nature study. And on a Saturday morning, we would go with him and we would walk for miles into the country, looking at birds, counting birds' eggs, turning over rocks and picking up snails. Do you know there's Agonia discus rotundatus and a Sepia nemoralis? That you can find those under rocks, which we all learnt from Jackie Newton. He was absolutely terrific at nature study, and we started this West Park Natural History Society because of him.
Did sport, were you good at sport? Did you enjoy sport?
No, I wasn't very good at sport because I was so busy with the choir, and being on Saturday morning, being in this Natural History Society, sport took a second part.
And you would go on, and at what age did you leave your senior school?
Unfortunately, I left before my full time was up, because my father, 1934, 35, very, very depressing times. My father had been out of work for a long time. Do you know what he used to do? He would get on his bicycle. He was a proud man, but he would get on his bicycle and cycle to South Shields or Durham and play in pubs and come back and empty his pockets with a few pennies on the table when he was out of work. And that's the way things were. Yes. So that when I had the chance of a job, he said, in in the factory, there's room for an apprentice. And although I was doing well at school and studying things like French and Spanish, and I went and worked in a factory just because there was a job available.
And
I was lucky to get it.
And you were the oldest of the children, weren't you?
Oh, yes, so, yes. I had three sisters younger than myself.
Had you ever been able, as a family, to go on any kind of annual holiday?
No, never ever. The greatest thrill of our lives was when there was an old bus and we used to pay tuppence each, and it would take us to Saltwell Park in Gateshead. That was a day outing. That was out once a year. Apart from that, we did enjoy ourselves because my aunties with their families, neighbours, we would get together and walk down to Roker or up to Tunstall Hill or into Backhouses Park and have picnics. And it was mainly water and bread, mind you, and play games. Thoroughly enjoyed. And talk about subterfuge. On the way back from Roker, there were certain streets had fish and chip shops. And our mothers used to bring us up the other because they hadn't the money to buy fish and chips for us, you see. So we'd be brought up the other streets, not the fish and chip shop streets.
Who was the disciplinarian in your home?
The dad. He could just shout and that was it. But my mother was very religious. We were taught when we sat down at the table always to say a grace for what we are about to receive. And then when we finished, we had to say a grace, thank you, and then please may we leave the table. When we went to bed at night, the four of us all knelt round the bed and said prayers, and my, sometimes they lasted a long time, because it was God bless Mummy, God bless Daddy, God bless Uncle Fred, God bless, and we went through all the family. In fact, when the war broke out and my two younger sisters were evacuated into Yorkshire, Pickering and places like that, the people in the house used to listen outside the door and listen to their prayers. They'd never heard children say prayers like that, especially away from home.
And you'd only be about six, I suppose, at the time. Do you have any memories of the harsh days of the general strike and what was happening to your family?
Yes. And at the top of our street, there would be a big notice board, pits idle, you know, and men would be standing around at the corner ends, couldn't go to work because the pits were idle. And the pits would be named on the board, Suits with Pit Idle, Hetton Pit Idle, yes.
And many of your neighbours would be involved in that, were they?
Actually, sometimes my dad was the only one at work in the street.
When they got into trouble, did you actually see, if they were in a colliery house, did you actually see them being thrown out of it?
No, there were no colliery houses nearby, no. The men who worked at the pits from roundabout weren't in colliery houses. It was only in the villages where they had the colliery houses.
And feeding people, I'm thinking in terms of your neighbours particularly, whose husband or family were out of work, did the sub kitchens appear? Was there anything of that nature?
No, not that I know of, no.
At school, did you have to stay for your lunch or did you come home?
Oh, there was no such thing as staying for lunch. Some of the lads in my class came without boots and torn trousers, patched trousers. That was in my first school. Of course, when I passed the 11 plus, I was surprised because I then was in a different class of boys, some of them from well-to-do homes. In fact, my best friend, his dad was manager of Bins Limited, one of the departments of Bins Limited. They had their own car and their own garage, so my eyes were wide opened.
Yes, they would be wealthy in
they
your
were,
eyes.
Yes, yes.
At what age did you leave school?
15.
And you started working in this factory?
In the factory.
Which company was it?
It was Bins Limited. They had a factory where they made furniture, they did shop fitting. And my first job was underneath the ground. There was a big boiler, and all the pieces of wood and the sawdust and the shavings I had to collect, push down a hole, feed it into this boiler to keep the factory going.